In the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen.
Amen.
So we have this really rich story from the fifth chapter of Mark. Jesus is interacting with the crowd, and then Jesus interacting with a religious leader of the day, with a critically ill child, and also Jesus interacting with a woman who has some sort of blood disorder that apparently she's had for some time. The story delivers us two miracles: the miraculous healing of the woman's blood disorder, and then the resurrection of Jairus' daughter, who was critically ill and then died as Jesus was making his way to her. And all this happens, if you were around last week, all this happens when Jesus gets out of the boat. He's been at sea. He was asleep in the boat when a storm kicked up and he calmed the sea when the disciples awoke him as they were afraid that they would drown in the storm. That's the context of this story. Jesus moving around, teaching and healing as his disciples are getting to know him and as they are becoming oriented to his message, which we call the gospel. So I think back to these miracles, I think when those of us who are full inheritors of the Enlightenment, when we are high-minded, critical thinkers, when we hear these miracle stories, a process is set in motion. Those of us who are more cerebral or rational, we might hear these stories of miracles and we begin to examine each beat of the story. We do that with this intention of, well, did it or didn't it? Did the miracle happen, the one that the story depicts, or am I working toward the conclusion that maybe it didn't happen in the way the story tells it? We look at a story like the five loaves of bread and two smoked fish feeding 5,000 people, and maybe we walk away with the idea that, well, maybe that's what they shared at first, and then people were holding back, but the imperative to share was visible with the five loaves and the two fish, and people began sharing their resource with each other. Anybody else ever been down that road with that story? And that's cool. I think critical thinking is important. I do, but I think if we approach all these stories in the Bible like that, we're likely missing out on some of the meat of these stories. I feel like if we read the Bible like that always and don't hear what I'm not saying, it's okay, even important to read it like that sometimes, but if we read the Bible like that always, we can't see the trees for the forest. We get the overall gist, but we miss these rich details of human involvement and interaction, details of human relationship, and the love is in the details. Maybe think about that for a sec while I tell you a story. I have a friend whose name is Dan. Dan is one of the three founders of a corporation called Manifest Works. Manifest Works is a workforce development and job placement organization that works primarily with those who've been impacted in some way by foster care, homelessness, or incarceration, and many of those have been impacted by all three. Manifest Works is Los Angeles-based, so they've created partnerships with the entertainment industry to help develop folks for and place folks in careers in the entertainment industry. Dan's work is inspiring and creative and most times all-consuming. Prior to founding Manifest Works, Dan created something else that is absolutely impressive, that certainly gave way to Manifest Works. For years, every Saturday morning, every single Saturday morning, Dan and a few others drove from Los Angeles up to Malibu and into Malibu Canyon, where they led a sort of life skills course that they authored as they mentored a group of young men, really boys, who were incarcerated in a youth detention facility there. Every Saturday, every single Saturday, which is just incredible service toward a group of people who, for the most part, received very little positive attention and continuous care and nurture from the adults in their life. So Dan's a friend, and he's also skilled at putting together resources to support his work, which means on more than a few occasions, I went up to Malibu to the jail to work with Dan and a handful of other adults and with these kids who were incarcerated there. And I'll tell you, the first time that I went, I was scared. The idea of going and helping in this youth detention facility was a bit unnerving to me. But what I can tell you is, once I did it that first time, it was no longer scary. Not in the least. And these kids who were a part of this class, they didn't have to be there. I mean, they had to be there. They had to be at this facility because they were incarcerated, but they didn't have to be in this class. And so each was invested in his time together. And for a group of boys or young men, they were pretty in touch with themselves and their predicament and their past experiences. They were articulate, even with a real measure of street slang in their vocabulary. I noticed on my first trip to the jail, while the guys were talking, while they were sharing, they had a particular use of slang that struck me. They might describe something that had happened to them. Maybe they would tell a story of a fight that broke out in the jail, or they would tell the story of their arrest or their last arrest, or they would tell a story from their childhood, almost always a painful one. And during the telling of that story, and when they finished the story, they would look to us or to me or to their friends, their fellow inmates, and they would say, "You feel me? You feel me, Jimmy? You feel me, Dan? You feel me, Lucy? You feel me?" And I'm still just struck by that. And I think if I were telling you a story and if I were trying to find some acknowledgement, if I were trying to gauge if you had received what I said, I'd probably say, "Do you understand? Do you understand what I've told you? Do you understand what I've described?" And yet here's this group of kids, who've had a really rough go. Most who've had a rough go since day one, since they came out of the room. And they've also done some pretty bad stuff too, they have. They weren't seeking understanding. They didn't want to know if I was able to understand them. They wanted to know if I was able to feel what they were feeling. They need somebody who more than understands the facts of the story that they've told and experience. They need someone who can feel what they're feeling, what they've felt, what they still feel. They are looking for what we call empathy. And I just can't help but think of the circumstances of this story that we have from Mark's Jesus. You know, my approach, do you understand? Do you understand, Jimmy? Do you understand there was a woman who was afflicted with a blood disorder for a really, really long time, and then she reached out for Jesus and she was healed. She no longer had that blood disorder after that. Well, yeah. I mean, I understand. And what about Jairus? Do you understand? He was a religious leader with a critically ill child and in desperation and somewhat at risk to his own standing in the power structures of the religious culture of the day. He reached out. He reached out to this eccentric rabbi for healing when his daughter was sick and then dead, and she wasn't either of those things anymore. Do you understand, Jimmy? Well, yeah. I mean, I get the facts of the story for sure. I understand, but it seems pretty unbelievable. But what if we are not after belief here? What if we are after something more than belief? Something deeper? And then there's Jesus. I can almost hear him aloud in my ear. Yeah, you understand. But do you feel me, Jimmy? Do you feel me? Those emotions, those feelings, when they're informing our lives, what happens? I mean, if you think about it, the context of this story, if it were to happen today in this way, and Jesus were not in tune with the feelings of these two and so many others, I can tell you how it would go. Jesus, the rabbi, the guru, the celebrity preacher, would step off the tour bus and into the green room. He would freshen up before the next speaking engagement, maybe some sparkling water and a light snack. Nothing too heavy because, you know, he's about to present. And whatever his favorite was would already be there waiting for him because Thomas or Peter or Jude would have called ahead. You know, he likes Pellegrino, not LaCroix. Almonds, but lightly salted almonds. He never would have met Jairus, and she would have never touched him because he would have disembarked behind the velvet rope. But that's not what happens. That's not what happens in this story or in the life of Jesus. His course is dictated by the felt experiences of the other. Do you feel me, Jimmy? He says. Do you feel me, St. John's? He's saying. Jesus is inviting us in a wonderfully non-shaming way, inviting us through his actions, through his example, to connect with, to feel alongside the other, to feel alongside each other. The mission is to connect. The mission is directed by the needs of the people in front of him. Wonder what that would be like for us to step off the schedules and toward the people who are right in front of us, to feel people rather than understand them. Amen.